Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. And opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Sunday night, it is May the 22nd of 2016, and how are you? We hope that you are well. Welcome in to the Lotus Place on Black Talk Radio Network, and we want you to go on to our webpage and donate so that we can keep these shows coming to you full force and powerful voices heard. So go on to the webpage and donate. Keep us alive. We need to keep the black media flourishing and thriving, and we can do that with your support. So thank you so much for tuning in tonight. I hope that your week has been well and going into this week, last week of the month. Oh, my gosh. Children will be probably going into their last week of school, and people are planning for summer vacations and all. So we hope that you have a beautiful, beautiful summer ahead of you. And oh my God, just hearing all the different stories that have happened in school over the past year with children being slammed down by these resource officers, just all kinds of things going on. I know that some of these children are so happy to be out of classes. Not just because of the instruction, but just to be safe. And that's pretty bad. But we are here tonight, and it is Black Talk Sunday, and we want to talk about all things community news. We want to talk about the election, the crazy election, and definitely want to salute Brother Malcolm, May 19th. That was his birthday, and we want to celebrate that and listen to some clips from Brother Malcolm El Haj Malik Shabazz. So I'm glad that you are tuning in. Let me just give out the number to everyone. You can call in 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032. Press pound and then press star 61 if you would like to share a comment. So tonight, as I was kind of like doing my research for some topics, I came across this fantastic clip of Sister Soldier, who I love. I've read some of her books and just really enjoy hearing her speak. She's such a brilliant young sister. So I want to share that clip as well as some other clips from my good friend Ron Hurd. He interviewed Dr. Umar Johnson, and Dr. Umar Johnson speaks on the death of Prince. And so I'd like to share that with you all as well. And another sister from Haiti that I've come across, Bayini Bello, and she speaks on Haitian history. She speaks eloquently on Haitian history, I should say. So but before we get into her clip and Sister Soldier's clip, let me just share one from Brother Malcolm. And this is a clip on who taught you how to hate yourself. Because we do see a lot of that going on. And just to preface this clip, especially now, you have a lot of sisters that are going natural, which is all great. And then I see a lot of brothers, like on some of the Facebook postings and different social media, talking about, oh, sisters need to go natural. Sisters need to do this. Sisters need to do that with her hair and all that. But we have to remember, we can't be so hard on the sisters, brothers, and other sisters that are natural, because I know that that happens too. I remember being a part of the New Conscious community, and we were talking about sisters that wouldn't cut the perm out of their hair and go natural. It's really a psychological thing when you're dealing with sisters and their hair, because we've been taught for so long that having this kinky curly hair is not beautiful. When you grow up, especially if you grew up in my time in the 70s, when the commercials were all about Wella Blossom and your hair blowing in the wind and all of this, your long hair and your straight long hair, and we were not aware of how beautiful our hair is and why it's kinky and the benefits of having this kinky hair and how a lot of people wish they really had this type of hair. We were not aware of that. So we grew up thinking, and when you grow up thinking that something, some aspect of your person is ugly, then that It really does something to you psychologically, and you grow up with this feeling of feeling less than, or feeling worthless, feeling ugly, just feeling downright ugly. And so, sisters, we were taught to feel, we were taught that our hair is ugly, and so parents not even realizing that when you start pressing that baby's hair and perming that baby's hair at an early age, how detrimental that is to the child, not just the physical aspects which we've discussed here at the Lotus Place, but also the psychological damage that that does, because you're immediately telling that child that something is not right with you. I have to alter your hair because I need to alter you because something is not right with you. And so that's a lot of psychological damage that goes into play with the whole hair issue that we as sisters have to experience. So I love it when Malcolm talks about this, who taught you how to hate yourself, because we were taught to hate ourselves. And when you're taught to hate yourself, then you do bad things to yourself. You have inappropriate behavior. You have inappropriate responses to other people, and particularly other people that look like you. So let's just play this clip on Who Taught You to Hate Yourself by Brother Malcolm.
Who taught you, please? Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate? You should ask who yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you. We teach you to love the hair that God gave you. Hair you way out in the middle of the ocean, can't swim, and you worried about someone that's in the bathtub and can't swim. We don't steal, we don't gamble, we don't lie, and we don't cheat. And that also deprives the government of revenue. Because you can't get into a whiskey bottle without getting past the government seal. You can't open a deck of cards without getting past the government seal. There's a white man makes the whiskey and then puts you in jail for getting drunk. He sells you the cards and the dice and puts you in jail when he catches you using them. So he's against us because we fix it where he can't catch you anymore. We take the dice out of your hands and the cards out of your hands and the whiskey out of your head. The most disrespected person in America.
All right. As he was about to say there, and let me open up King B's mic, the most disrespected person in America black woman. Good evening, King B. How are you?
Oh, I am just fine. How's everybody doing?
Oh, doing well, King B. Thank you so much. It's just me here on the line for right now.
Oh. You know, I've watched with Brother Malcolm.
Yes.
Twice.
Yeah, share some stories of Brother Malcolm with us, please.
Okay. Brother Malcolm was a very strikingly handsome brother with red hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in the natural. He had freckles, light skin with freckles. He had this captivating smile that if you saw him blocks away, you could see this smile. He had perfect teeth, upper and lower row, perfect teeth. He was a man that would give you eye-to-eye contact. I first marched with Malcolm when he came to my former church, the Solomon Presbyterian Church, which is a historic church in the Bed-Stuy area of Brooklyn, to support the then pastor Milton A. Glamson, who had a citywide school boycott, and none of the leading pastors in Bed-Stuy would dare march with Reverend Glamson, who came from Harlem, two well-known clergy. They may not agreed with the tactics of getting justice and liberation, but they agreed that they would never sell out our people. This was Congressman Adam Clayton Powell and Malcolm X. They, two giants, marching with Milton Glamson, who was a short man but had a tall stature as far as in thinking about our people having quality education. At the time, it was de facto school segregation. And that Malcolm was a great supporter of Dr. Glamson and vice versa. Unfortunately, Malcolm was so dependent on Reverend Glamson that he would let Reverend Glamson be his warm-up man during the days when Malcolm would speak at the Audubon Ballroom. And any time Reverend Glamson couldn't show up, he would have someone to come in instead or send Malcolm a telegram in time for Malcolm to know that he couldn't show up, or to a phone call. On that fateful Sunday afternoon, Malcolm got neither from Glamson. And Malcolm, he had his trustees to be on the lookout in case Glamson would be coming up late, because sometimes he would come late. But on that fateful Sunday, Malcolm was backstage waiting almost 3 hours. And he finally said, I can't keep the people waiting forever. He went out and met his fate. Now, up to that point, Glamson was cool, but I did not understand, and he never did explain, what was the reason why he betrayed his good friend, Brother Malcolm. And Malcolm was serious about our liberation. The government knew he was not for sale, and that when he broke with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, it was because he caught Elijah Muhammad in a lie about not seeing white Muslims in Mecca. He said the first thing he saw was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white Muslim. Mm-hmm. But when this white Muslim told him that he's white, he meant that it just happened to be a happenstance that that's his color. But that don't mean that he's seeing somebody as a boss. And a white man said, Malcolm said, when a white man says that he's white, that means he's the boss. He rules you. He rules your community. Malcolm, he could have been one of the greatest lawyers we ever had, but his teacher told him, you don't want to do that. Your people cannot become lawyers. Try being a carpenter or something in the trade, in the vocation business. So killing that idea that Malcolm was desirous of becoming a lawyer, it was so clear to hear his brother be able to grasp the language while he was in prison, his vocabulary, studying every vocabulary word while he was in jail, to know what it is to speak properly using the English language, to make a point to our people that you don't have to be down all the time in your mind, that you're down also in your mind, when you could pick yourself up and become a new person by just changing your thought processes. See, our people many times don't understand that we were taught to hate each other, to hate ourselves, by a technology called white supremacy that is a demonic poison since slavery that we've been fooled, psychologically conditioned. And then we have these black pastors, many of them are charlatans that do not care to tell our people what they don't want to hear, but what they need to hear, and that is the truth. So Malcolm was unwilling, he was unbought and unbought. He loved his people so that he was willing to die. And that was the thing that Dr. King and Malcolm and Adam Clayton Powell Jr., who didn't want to believe that he was possibly poisoned by this government, but Adam Clayton Powell Jr., Malcolm X, and Dr. King, leaving to a lot of these black pastors, they do not dare honor Dr. King's assassination, nor do they honor Malcolm X's assassination. Okay? And, of course, Adam Clayton Powell, who got the same, on the same day that, the same date that Dr. King died, but Malcolm's birthday was just this past 19th. And there's been no memorial, significant memorials headed by pastors this Sunday or the Sunday before. Mm-hmm. And right in Harlem.
So nothing was held in Harlem for Malcolm?
It was the traditional march by the Malcolm X disciples and faithful few. They had a march on 121st Street and demanded that stores were closed down for 3 hours while this demonstration and rally was going on in Harlem. But none of Malcolm's children supported this boycott or he would participate in the march. So, you know, it's bad when the enemy kills your father, but the offspring do not carry on where the father left off at. And unfortunately for the mother, she only saw blaming the nation of Islam. Mm-hmm. She couldn't see the bigger picture. What about the puppeteer? You don't blame the puppet. And Malcolm said, you blame the puppeteer. The puppeteer was this government using an organization that had jealousy, envy, and envious of Malcolm. So the die was cast that they could use the poison to take down Malcolm, because Malcolm was a threat to white supremacy. He really was. If he had been allowed to survive long enough to be able to set up the international contact between Africa and in America, no matter where we live, be it in Europe, in the Caribbean, or here in, you know, in this diaspora, Malcolm was, would have been able to set up this thing that Marcus Garvey had wanted us to long ago have, a Pan-Africanism spirit where we see ourselves as one people. You have blacks from the Caribbean who for years were saying they're British subject. Imagine saying you are a British subject. And then you have blacks in Haiti who are the only people in the Caribbean that had to fight an armed struggle to free themselves from the slave master. And they paid a heavy price. A heavy price.
I have a great clip from this sister named Bayana Belliel. And she speaks on Haitian history. You should YouTube her, Candy. You should really YouTube her. I mean, she spoke with some information about Dudley Bookman that I didn't know, like how he acquired his name. His slave master burned books, I think the Bible, burned the Bible on him.
Ooh.
And the slave master's name was Duty, and so he burned the books on him, and that's how Duty Bookman gained the name, acquired the name Duty Bookman. I never heard that history. So this man was burned all over his body with books. The slave master just burned them. But let me just share a little bit about Malcolm for those who may not know nothing about Malcolm X. Just a little history. You know, sometimes we have people that tune in, and this is why they tune in, because they want to learn. So Malcolm X was born Malcolm Little on May 19, 1925 in Omaha, Nebraska. His mother, Louise Norton Little, was a homemaker occupied with the family's eight children. His father, Earl Little, was an outspoken Baptist minister and an avid supporter of black nationalist leader Marcus Garvey. So Malcolm's parents were Garveyites. Yes.
Imagine that.
Mm-hmm. So he was politicized at an early age. Earl's civil rights activism prompted death threats from the white supremacist organization, forcing the family to relocate twice before Malcolm's fourth birthday. Regardless of Little's efforts to elude the Legion, in 1929, their Lansing, Michigan home was burned to the ground. 2 years later, Earl's body was found lying across the town's trolley tracks. Police ruled both incidents as accidents, but the Littles were certain that members of the Black Legion were responsible. Louise suffered an emotional breakdown several years after the death of her husband and was committed to a mental institution, while her children were split up among various foster homes and orphanages.
His mother was from Grenada, I believe.
His mother was from Grenada?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very interesting. And you know, now Grenada has some interesting history on how they fought.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to hear their beloved late assassinated leader, Maurice Bishop, at Hunter College. And as he was speaking, it came to the climax. I said, my God, the man don't have an army.
Mm-hmm.
That racist dog, Ronald Reagan, used a lie to invade Grenada. And after the killing of Maurice Bishop by some high stooges by the CIA,
mm-hmm.
all Maurice Bishop was trying to do was to get black people in the United States and in the Caribbean to come together, because his biggest threat was that he spoke English, and he spoke very well, and that he was, didn't say officially, but he believed in the philosophy of Pan-Africanism, where we would see ourselves as one people. So Malcolm X's mother was a Grenadian. His father was a Focus brother born in America, but he knew who he was, but he also knew whose he was.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you have those two components and you preach the forbidden gospel of black liberation, you become targeted.
You become what?
Targeted. You know, you
are
targeted.
Definitely.
And that our people do not believe that this government is going the way. When Malcolm said in 1964, way back in 1964, he said, the same ingredients that was in Hitler's Germany was in America today. You had a German, third-generation German named Donald Trump, whose grandfather had the last name changed to become Americanized, but it was German was Dorf. This man got the bulk of white people following him to believe that he's going to bring back the times when blacks knew their place. That was post-Reconstruction, which was the worst of time next to slavery for black folks in this country, and pre-civil rights. Lynchings was going on and still going on, because we have Sandra Bland, that's a recent lynching. Eric Garner in Staten Island by a police officer, that was a lynching. There are many forms of recent times of lynching
several,
going on.
Several other young ladies and men, here in Houston, found dead in jail cells. It's very common here in Houston. It just doesn't make the news, but it's very common.
I heard that there was a young child had a rope, had rope burns around the neck. Mother
Dunning
sent me the picture. And then you said that there was another two of them, a girl and a boy with rope burns around the neck in Houston.
In Dallas.
She was attending
some type of an elite school. I think she
was
the only black child there.
You see, these black parents that have the means to send their child to those kind of elite schools, they are living in denials that racism is still alive and well.
Yeah.
And that you could do to a black child what you can't do to a white child, and you can get away with it, especially if the perpetrator is white and the victim is black. You can get away with it. Because black people never had, and this is why I'm sorry Malcolm didn't have the time to stress the importance of having political and legal protection. We have no black lawyers that are social engineers. Most of the black lawyers are social parasites. I sat in on a trial when a young man was not breaking any law, was sitting with his blood brother on his subway ventilation that was elevated where you could get the cool breeze from the subway here in New York when on a hot steaming summer day. You want to feel an amazing cold breeze standing on the subway ventilation. But the newer ones that had the raised so you could sit on it and feel the cool breeze coming from the subway running down below. This lawyer happened to be a black man. Had his client railroaded to jail. And the cops that called the department were two predatory cops, not even 5 months out of the academy, but knew what it was to be a predator. And they kept preying on these boys, black brothers, until they got what they wanted, a confrontation. The lawyer in the courtroom did no lawyering, just made sure his client was railroaded to jail. Now, mind you, the young man broke no law until the cop put her hand, it was a female black woman officer, who put her hands on the brother of the defendant. And when the defendant's brother went off on that cop, he tried to calm the brother down by taking him to this bodega. To know there, she calls for a backup, and all hell breaks loose.
Oh, wow.
And this is something that's going on nationwide with black men, young men, are preyed upon. I don't mean P-R-A-Y-E. I mean P-R-A-Y. I mean P-R-E-Y.
P-R-E-Y.
And they're preyed upon. These young black men are preyed upon.
They do. Because they're trying to pass laws now whereas resisting arrest is a felony. And
imagine
so
that.
If you even begin to question and move back or move the wrong way, then that's resisting arrest. Canty, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. I believe Feather Light has a mind, body, and spirit for us when we come back. Feather Light, you there? I think you're on mute. So as soon as we come back, we'll be ready for your mind, body, and spirit. You're listening to The Lotus Place, and we'll be right back.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Back during slavery, when black people like me talked to the slaves, they didn't kill them. They sent some old house Negro along behind him to undo what he said. You have to read the history of slavery to understand this. There were two kinds of Negroes. There was that old house Negro and the field Negro. And the house Negro always looked out for his master. When the field Negroes got too much out of line, he held them back in check. He put them back on the plantation. The house Negro could afford to do that because he lived better than the field Negro. He ate better, he dressed better, and he lived in a better house. He lived right up next to his master in the attic or the basement. He ate the same food his master ate and wore his same clothes. And he could talk just like his master, good diction. And he loved his master more than his master loved himself. That's why he didn't want his master hurt. If the master got sick, he'd say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick?" When the master's house caught a fire, he'd try and put the fire out. He didn't want his master's house burned. He never wanted his master's property threatened. And he was more defensive of it than the master was. That was the house Negro. But then you had some field Negroes who lived in huts, had nothing to lose. They wore the worst kind of clothes, they ate the worst food, and they caught hell. They felt the sting of the lash. They hated their master. Oh, yes, they did. If the master got sick, they prayed that the master died. If the master's house caught a fire, they prayed for a strong wind to come along. This was the difference between the two. And today you still have house Negroes and field Negroes. I'm a field Negro.
All right, and that was Brother Malcolm X, whose birthday was just celebrated, May 19th. Brother Malcolm, peace be upon you and rest in power. Okay, so Feather, let me see, what are you, Feather? And your mic is open. And Delta, welcome Delta, and welcome Icy Hot and King B.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, Delta.
Hello. Hey. Namaste, everyone.
Namaste.
Namaste. All right.
Namaste.
Okay, so tonight I have for the ladies and gentlemen a story. It's called The Porcupine Story. Okay? So we're all familiar with the porcupine, the very unique, and different porcupine. It's a creature, very, very unique. I got this story from Paulo Coelho, who is a famous author of the number one bestseller, The Alchemist. The Alchemist is recommended for further enlightenment and involving, for those who want enlightenment and involving, his stories help you in that area. So this particular story,
a very good book.
It is. It is.
I thought I had it in my Amazon Kindle, but I don't, so I need to order that.
Yes, it's a very, very, very good book. I tried to get it from the library a few years back. I finally had to just give up on that and get it myself. So this
This particular story, the porcupine story by Paulo Coelho, tells a story about when the ice age came and porcupines had to find a way to survive. Now, as we know, the porcupine is a very unique creature with a special ability to protect and defend itself from its enemies, those who wish to do it harm. So I decided to use his story to write this piece for our mind, body, and spirit segment with a little twist, of course. So here it goes. At first, the peculiar porcupines, and they are peculiar, decided to group together to keep warm and protect one another from the harsh, deadly elements of the world. Unfortunately, their spiky quills made it uncomfortable to stay in such close proximity, so they dispersed. They went off on their own. Many who survived the elements began to dislike their piny quills, so much so they began to hate themselves and those who resembled them or reminded them of who they were. They hated the fact that they were so different from other animals and lost pride in themselves. Of course, this left them exposed to the elements even more, and they started to freeze to death until they realized that they needed to make a significant choice: stay apart and die, or tolerate and accept their fellow porcupines' thorns and survive. Wisely, they chose to stay together, knowing that the small wounds that they received from each other was worth it in the end. We are like the porcupines. We are prickly and so often find a way to offend and take offense to those around us as African Americans. Our men blast their women for simple things like wearing a weave and fake eyelashes, calling her a thot, a bitch, a hoe, singing to the oppressor's tune to degrade and slander her essence. They say the black woman is a gold digger, yet they have no gold. Those that come close would prefer to give their gold to anyone else other than the black woman. They ran out of ugly words, so someone just made up a word called hot, like Caucasians do. Now, hot is a word. Black women want more of our black men to speak out against the brutality shown toward his women and children, become more aware of the flight to white urge to hold the oppressor's woman as some consolation prize, as we ourselves call them deadbeat dads and convince ourselves we're just fine without a male. We consume the Caucasian's poison food and forfeit loving our beautiful body and other assets for whatever we can find in the beauty supply store to copy others who are actually imitating us as Asians live in luxury off our feed. We need each other still in order to survive. This is where we are. It is glaringly clear and evident that a black man is no longer pulled over for the age-old black man driving farce, or even the highly racialized motivated. Excuse me.
Go make it better. Oh boy. My God. Okay.
This is where we are. It is glaringly clear and evident that a black male is no longer pulled over for the age-old black male driving farce, or even the highly racially motivated stop and frisk. No, we are way beyond that. The black male can get blown away for crossing the street, examining a gun in the gun department, or coming down the stairs with his girlfriend, or even in a more brutal and sadistic death, date a white woman in the wrong town. And it is considered justified or suicide, and it is accepted by all. The perpetrator gets paid in full. That would throw anybody off their game in many ways. The black man's entire physique is at question. Why are they so big? I'm scared for my life. They're so big, like their presence itself is just scary. Shoot to kill, not to wound. As Sade put it in her song, Immigrant, for even the toughest among us, that would be too much.
It is clear to many, but still tends to escape some, how black women, including myself, were tricked and brainwashed into thinking their beauty, their natural beauty, their essence, was not good enough, somehow inferior. And we have passed this misinformation, this bold-faced lie, this agreement on down to our daughters and great-granddaughters, from slavery to now. We are queens by nature, and some of our own are calling us that new word, and we accept it. Women have always been creative when it comes to hairstyles and glamour, from Cleopatra to Diana Ross. We know that's not their hair, but doesn't it look beautiful? Doesn't it look stylish, classy? It was more for the flair, another look, mystery. Men loved it. We invented dye, lip color, and wigs.
Yep.
So it's not just the weave. It's not just the weave. It's the extreme need for it. The need to be extreme, to be accepted. The thought of not being whole or beautiful without it. Because this is what is shown constantly in the media, along with the falsehood of your kind is not beautiful. So the young girl says, okay, so I'm not beautiful, and everybody loves beauty. What do I have to do to get beautiful and get love and gifts and fancy cars and all that I see on every day in the box, the TV box? Our wealthy and famous seem to gravitate toward the opposite of me. They would prefer to build their dynasty with a prostitute. That seems okay. I can change how I look. I can do that. I can be freaky. We are programmed daily, 24/7, as to what is acceptable and good in the eyes of the ruling class. And we want so much to be accepted. Back in the day, we had 5 channels. They went off the air around midnight or 1 a.m. The media, or news as we call them, were bound by ethical laws to only tell us the facts, not share their personal opinions. If a news reporter reported false information, they could be cast out of the news world forever. Truth and fact were important. Now we are actually being programmed. There are no ethics. The popular news stations, Fox, CNN, and others, are owned and operated by corporations who can, like other corporations, run their businesses the way they please. It's bought and paid for, and they pay taxes. So whatever the need, whether it is attitude toward a certain group of people, style, political preferences, sexual habits, what is normal and what is not, all can be managed through programming. And on such a large scale as it is today, in 2016, Internet 24-hour shows, excuse me, it's having a profound impact on us porcupines. We just want to be accepted. Stop killing us. Yes, I'm gay. No threat here. Yes, I have hair down to my butt. I know my hair is ugly. I agree. Yes, I am a man, a real black man, but okay, I'll wear a skirt on national television. Help set the trend, or a woman's cutoff as a football player, to be accepted. Yes, I'll show everything I got and let men call me names to be accepted. Everyone else is doing it. I'll strive for someone else's standard of beauty as I send my children unprotected into the hands of those who hate them, abuse them, manhandle and miseducate them, rather than teaching them ourselves, all to be accepted. The environment and elements around us, as we are separated like the porcupines, are far more harmful and deadly to us than we are to each other when we come together with our prickly quills or our prickly nature. We all have them. Let's learn to live with the sharp prickly quills of others and realize that we too have sharp points that offend others, and do like the porcupines. Deal with the little wounds, but be powerful together as a unit. We need each other to survive. Ashe
and namaste.
Namaste. Wow. Oh, wow. My goodness. I love that. The,
awesome.
The porcupine.
Yes.
You said so many good points in there, and I was trying to take some notes. Wait a minute. Let me just do this. Yeah.
thank you.
I was trying to take some notes, and then I just had to just stop and just listen. But I love, you know, I love the gold digger part because, you know, my God, I have to say this. We have so many men that are always complaining about women being gold diggers. But, you know, in women, we are just so forgiving and caring and so nice. We never, never, never come back at men and say, well, you, and maybe we should come up with a term for this. Men, they pick their women based on physical appearance.
Exactly.
It's all about what she looks like first.
Right. Her butt.
You know.
Her tits. You know. How fast I can get those panties down.
How fine she is.
Mm-hmm.
How cute
mm-hmm.
she is. It's more so how fine she is.
And even the color of her skin.
And how cute. Oh, God, yes.
Oh. It's like a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A trophy. Mm-hmm. And the more high profile he is, the lighter the woman becomes.
Exactly.
To the point where she's either near white or she's white.
Yes. Damn near white or white. Exactly.
And the idea that you find a brother going with a sister who's dark, wears her hair natural, and he's a high profile brother, it's very rare, if ever.
Very rare, yes.
And
very rare.
The very idea that black women now are supposed to be so vicious against black men don't want to be with black women. They'll be with any other woman outside the race or with another man.
Yeah, but prayer they're not gay. It's just, you know, free sex,
Yeah.
I'm not gay.
No, and the idea that this involves his life not being gay, and when the Bible says it's an unnatural act, and it's doing it to another man, and that's supposed to be love that you find fulfilling for you. It's like saying God made a mistake. That was not supposed to be just man and woman. It's supposed to be Adam and Steve, too. We've seen these brothers look well chiseled bodies. Look, they're just coming out, they live in the gym. No, not a flab, pound for pound. They look like a chilling machine or Mr. Atlas. But with.
Don't get your hopes up.
That's right.
He'll
tell his sister, listen, I'm sorry, I don't do women, I just do men.
Only
thing you can do for me is find me a man that's willing to let me do it to him.
Or get it done to him.
You can be with the man out on a date, and you will see a fine-looking man walk by. He'll be looking at him just as hard as you are.
Just as hard.
And Featherlight, I like the part where you mentioned queens by nature and also wigs, because one of my favorite ancestors is Queen Tai. And Queen Tai, I think Queen Tai was like one of the first inventors of wigs. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that one. But she did wear wigs, and they wore wigs for different reasons. Supposedly, there was a lot of radiation in the climate back then. And so a lot of the women, they wore these wigs to protect their hair. And they also wore wigs just for beauty reasons, just being different, because
that's
our nature, and that's why I have to, you know,
creativity.
I have to sometimes stop myself when I see sisters with these, what some of us may call weird hairstyles or strange hairstyles. But a lot of our sisters in the ancient days, they wore a lot of different braided styles, and if you look at pictures during those times, they took a lot of time sitting down braiding each other's hair and crafting different styles.
Right.
And they would use different dyes and different different things like, say, beets or indigo to make different colors and makeup.
Right.
And so that's just our nature. We've always been into some type of beautification of ourselves. Not that we didn't like ourselves.
Right.
It's just a part of just the beauty.
Yes, yes.
We are
the only creatures, the only beings whose hair defies gravity.
Gravity.
We can stand our hair up and it will stay.
Mm-hmm.
Caucasians can't do that. It just falls. They invented the hairspray to make it stick and stiff, and we started using it, but we didn't need that. It will stay. We only needed hairspray when we started imitating their look, you know. But our hair, it will, if we pull it up and kind of pat it, it'll stay up, you know, in its natural form.
Yeah, like people call the afro the actual halo. That was our halo.
Right.
Which is why we couldn't wear them in the workplace for so many years.
Right.
The
afro came out after I had gotten my first corporate job, so they couldn't fire me for wearing it. But I was lucky. I didn't have to go on an interview with my afro. Same thing with my piercing.
Yeah, I read an article recently about how many sisters go on interviews with, you know, a straight hairstyle, and then that second day of work they come back in with their braids or
You know, that happened to me. That happened
and
to me.
Oh God!
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have I had to do that? You know, back in the day before I just decided I'm going natural, or else I'm going to sue. You know, so it goes back to the whole psychological thing that we have to go through, and the torment and the trauma that we have to endure. Without hair.
Right.
It's craziness.
Right.
It's craziness.
When I was working with FedEx, I had braids, and I wanted to go for an interview for a higher position working for one of the VPs. And the black sisters around me, they said, "Are you going to take your braids out for your interview next week?" I was like, "No. I mean, she's seen me." You know, that was so stupid. Why should I do that? You know, and I didn't. I didn't take my braids down.
Right. Good for you. Good for you. Let me see. Delta, you have some hot topics for us?
Hey, everybody. How you
Hello,
doing
Delta.
Tonight?
Hey, Delta. Before you come in, let me go ahead on and open Mother Hattie's mic. And Mother Hattie, I say hi. Please mute yourself. We don't want to hear you yelling at them children tonight again.
Well, you know what? You know I would not intentionally do that. I thought it was on mute, so I...
Yeah.
I'm not 100%.
I know.
So sorry.
Mother Hattie, you always tell us that. I know, Mother Hattie. I'm just reminding you. Make sure you're on mute before you start, you know, your background talk to the babies. I know you're trying to get them in bed and everything.
They were in the bed. And just sorry about that, like I said.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mother Hattie. All right, Delta, what you have for us?
Okay, can we come back in 5 minutes on my hot topics, please?
Oh, sure, we certainly can. And in the meantime, let me just, I have this great clip by Sister Soldier that I would love to share with everyone tonight. So let me just share that clip. Let me play this one first on Malcolm, since we are talking about Malcolm and celebrating his legacy. And then we'll come to...
Minister Malcolm, you have suggested that there are all kinds of movements in Harlem growing that you and I don't know about.
Oh, yes. Frustration itself has been sufficient, all that was necessary to make Negroes realize the importance of banding together. And Negroes are banding together.
Banding together in what kind of movements?
Different kinds of movements, all kinds of movements, and they remain almost invisible. They remain almost unknown, but yet they are there. When I say invisible, I mean invisible in the sense that their existence is unknown, and no matter how much you try and track them down, you can't find them. And never try and find them through the Negro leaders. The Negro leaders are famous as apologists. If you recall, one of the most famous Negro leaders in 1959 was asked by you about the black Muslim movement. And he said he knew nothing about it. And the next moment, you flashed a picture on the screen with him shaking hands with me. So if you will recall. So this is what, this is their policy, this is their attitude or their reaction. They never know what's going on in the Negro community.
And what form will the activities of these various so-called invisible movements take in Harlem this summer?
An example, Commissioner Murphy. Almost every statement that Commissioner Murphy makes would give you the impression that he's encouraging the police, rank and file policemen, that to take whatever method or measure is necessary to hold the Negroes in check. He feeds the type of statistics to the white public to make them think that Harlem is a complete criminal area, that everyone is prone toward violence. This gives the police the impression that they can then go and brutalize the Negroes or suppress the Negroes or even frighten the Negroes. Whenever something happens, 20 police cars converge on one area. This doesn't frighten Negroes. So it means that someone is either misinforming Commissioner Murphy and making him use tactics this year that he would not use 4 years ago, or that the former policeman Kennedy would not use. And this force that is so visible in the Harlem community creates a spirit of resentment in every Negro. They think they're living in a police state, and they become hostile toward the policeman. They think that the policeman is there to be against them rather than to protect them. And these thoughts, these frustrations, these apprehensions automatically are sufficient to make this make these Negroes begin to form means and ways to protect themselves in case the police themselves get too far out of line.
22 million black victims of Americanism are waking up, and they're gaining a new political consciousness, becoming politically mature. And as they become develop this political maturity, they're able to see the recent trends in these political elections. They see that the whites are so evenly divided that every time they vote, the race is so close they have to go back and count the votes all over again. And which means that any block, any minority that has a block of votes that stick together is in a strategic position. Either way you go, that's who gets it. You're in a position to determine who go to the White House and who stay in the doghouse. You're the one who has that power. You can keep Johnson in Washington, D.C., or you can send him back to his Texas cotton patch. You're the one who sent Kennedy to Washington. You're the one who put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years. And all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last. Because you're a chump. A political chump. In Washington, D.C., in the House of Representatives, there are 257 who are Democrats. Only 177 are Republican. In the Senate, there are 67 Democrats. Only 33 are Republicans. The party that you backed controls two-thirds of the House of Representatives and the Senate, and still they can't keep their promise to you, because you're a chump. Anytime you throw your weight behind a political party that controls two-thirds of the government, and that party can't keep the promise that it made to you during election time, and you are dumb enough to walk around continuing to identify yourself with that party, you're not only a chump, but you're a traitor to your race. And what kind of alibi do they come up with? They try and pass the buck to the Dixiecrats. Now, back during the days when you were blind, deaf, and dumb, ignorant, politically immature, naturally you went along with that. But today, as your eyes come open and you develop political maturity, you're able to see and think for yourself. and you can see that a Dixocrat is nothing but a Democrat in disguise. You look at the structure of the government that controls this country. It's controlled by 16 senatorial committees and 20 congressional committees. Of the 16 senatorial committees that run the government, 10 of them are in the hands of Southern segregationists. Of the 20 congressional committees that run the government, 12 of them are in the hands of Southern segregationists. And they're going to tell you and me that the South lost the war.
Yes, Brother Malcolm, you're a political chump. That's what y'all are. Y'all some political chumps. Just pretty chumps. Get it together. Get it together. If you hadn't learned by now, I don't know what's going to make you learn. If you didn't learn after George Bush stole that election and seeing all of this foolishness with the Supreme Court having to decide who's the president no matter who we voted for, if you have not learned by now with this Donald Trump being able to be the Republican nominee, I just don't know what. I don't know what. We play these clips about the superdelegates. We're trying to educate people about how this is all just a game and a scam. I don't know what. So you're tuned in to The Lotus Place. We will be right back after this break, and we want you to call in 641-715-3660. And the participant code is 549032. Press pound. Press star 61 if you would like to speak. We'll be right back.
Put your bad self.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Peace and love, black family. Dr. Umar Johnson, live and direct, Memphis, Tennessee, Sunday, May the 15th. We are live at the Slave Haven Underground Railroad. We had a powerful experience. I want to give a shout-out to the whole black Tennessee family, and I'm going to give a shout-out to We All Be Radio, the voice of Dixie. I just messed that up.
All right, go ahead. Okay, We All Be News, news-free Dixie for the 21st century.
This is Dr. Umar Johnson. Make sure you check out the We All Be News, news-free Dixie. We All Be News, news-free Dixie. Check them out. That's where you get the latest conscious information and critical information that needs to be put out into our community. Prince of Pan-Africanism, Memphis 2016. See y'all next time.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Sama'at and Brother Osazi for hosting that event for me. Sold out, jam-packed, a lot of love. And today we're here at the Slave Haven Underground Railroad Museum, where we had an opportunity to see a true life hiding place, an underground railroad station for our ancestors who all participated in that great journey northward, trying to seek freedom on the Underground Railroad. So this was a tremendous, tremendous experience, and I want to thank Mrs. Turner and family here at the Slave Haven Underground Museum in Memphis, Tennessee, for taking some time out of their busy schedule to meet with us.
That's excellent. I also want to talk about this year, 2016.
Yes, sir.
This is a really interesting year in terms of the energy, the paradigm shifting.
Yes, sir.
We lose a lot of people going home.
We are.
I just want to talk to you about, specifically right now, about Prince and also Afeni Shakur.
Yes.
The mother of Tupac Shakur.
Yes.
What do you think about their deaths? Because both of these people, so they were cremated real soon after they died, and a lot of people got questions about the way they died, and do you think that they were killed or murdered for their intellectual property?
With the Afeni Shakur situation, I'm not intimately familiar with the details of her passing, but what does raise suspicion for me about her untimely death was that the word was circulating that a full feature-length movie on the life of her son, Tupac Shakur, was in the making. And for her to die during the early stages of making that film is a great loss to us as a people, because she's probably the only living, she would have been the only living human being who could give us an accurate portrayal of who Tupac really was, what he meant, and what he was really trying to do. With her being gone, Tupac's legacy is largely going to be left up to speculation. Those who knew him, some may have even been close to him, but no one can really protect your legacy like your mother. And so for me, the loss of Afeni Shakur really means the loss of the true legacy of Tupac Shakur. As far as Prince goes, I'm pretty certain that Prince was murdered. I think he was murdered by Warner Brothers, just like I think Sony murdered Michael Jackson. Prince and Warner Brothers had come to an agreement 2 years ago that they was going to give him his masters back, which really didn't make any sense after all this long fight he's had with them for decades. But the stipulation, in order for Prince to get his masters, he had to give them the permission to reauthorize, to re-engineer the Purple Rain 30-year anniversary album. So they brought him back to the table just so they could get back involved into his music business. And I really believe that Prince did not like what was happening. He was going to separate again, and they knew that they had to kill him before he separated to guarantee them a stake in the interest of his estate. I'm willing to bet, just like with Michael Jackson, we heard a few months ago that Sony Records bought back the Beatles catalog from Michael's family. That's why he was murdered, for the Beatles catalog. His family sold it, not knowing what to do with it. I forecast the same thing to happen with Prince's estate. I'm willing to bet that Warner Brothers is going to end up owning all of Prince's music again. And I'm also willing to bet that the family is likely to sell to Warner Brothers all the unpublished music that Prince had. In fact, Prince's unpublished music is probably worth more than the published catalog, because he had more unreleased material than he had released. And I really believe what they wanted was that unreleased material. Can you imagine how much money is going to be made off of unreleased Prince albums? And it's even been stated that Prince had enough material where he could release an album every year, I believe, for the next 100 years.
Wow.
That's why he was murdered. And for him to be cremated as quickly as he was, what multi-millionaire gets cremated within 72 hours of an autopsy? That doesn't even make any sense. That's because you need to bury the evidence that shows that this man did not die from an illness, claiming he had the flu. Who dies of the flu with the type of money he has that can purchase any quality of medical care available in the world? Not only that, he was seen riding his bike in a local park in Minnesota. What black person rides a bike in the cold with a flu? It makes no sense. He was murdered by the music industry, as was Michael Jackson, as was Sam Cooke. Okay, they murdered Sam Cooke because he owned his own music. Okay, Prince was teaching other artists how to own their own music. You see, they murdered Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix's manager was an undercover British MI6 agent. And when Jimi Hendrix decided that he wanted to finance the Black Panther Party and other radical groups, his manager stepped in and forbade it. And then when Jimi found out he was being robbed by his manager, he decided to separate. And the next thing you know, they find him in the bathtub from an overdose, Whitney Houston style. And I believe Whitney was murdered because Whitney was about to investigate whether or not she had been robbed from Clive Davis, because for all the millions of albums that she sold and the billions of dollars she raised, going broke didn't make sense for Whitney Houston, who was the top female singing star of all time. Now, Mariah has sold more albums, but that's only because Whitney stopped publishing once she ran into her drug problem. So she was going to see where the rest of her money was. And I think she's probably going to investigate owning some of her catalog. And so she had to go.
So the problem is, like you talk about these different examples throughout history, Otis Redding, Sam Cooke, even Prince and Michael Jackson, is that are we winning the battle but yet losing the war? Like we win some battles.
I don't think we're winning the battle or winning the war.
Okay.
And when it comes to music, you got to recognize that music is another white racist institution. And I think the murder of Prince was deliberate, intentional, and was designed to send a message to all the black artists in the music industry that if you ever try to separate from us, we will kill you first. It's like the mafia. You cannot get out. Now, if you're a low-level artist, you'll get out because you're not worth much. But if you're somebody on that level, they're not letting you out. There's no way we're going to let you make money off of your album without giving us our cut. The message is clear.
And you know what's interesting? We speak of Sam Cooke. I know his manager, Alan Klein, I believe his name was. He also managed the Beatles. He stole from them as well.
Wow.
And so like, it's funny how these patterns come up and you know, all over the place.
See, Sam was also a good friend of Malcolm X,
right,
and Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
And rumor has it that he had told Dr. King and Malcolm X that once they came together and stopped fighting, he was going to finance the new civil rights movement. Mm. He was dead within weeks. Remember, they killed Sam Cooke 3 weeks before they killed Malcolm X. Mm. He was killed right before Malcolm. Yeah. So they was getting rid of anyone who could even potentially be part of an independent black progressive movement.
But how you look at, well, you go 20 years now with Tupac. You believe Tupac was murdered by the government?
No, Tupac was murdered. There's no question Tupac was murdered. Okay. In fact, we know for a fact that the CIA, excuse me, the FBI had Tupac and Big under surveillance for at least 2 weeks before their death. Mm-hmm. So if someone's trying to kill me and you're watching me, it's no way you can't know who's trying to kill me. Mm. And if no one is ever arrested or prosecuted, it's because you were the killer. You see, mm. Tupac was working with the gangs in L.A., the Crips and the Bloods. He was politicizing them, and he was going to put his money behind them. Mm. But Tupac was murdered by the music industry. How can you have the number one selling rapper in the world also being politically inclined? Mm. Imagine if Jay-Z was also interested in the black struggle. Tupac was probably the most significant threat they may have had since Malcolm X, because he had the following. Mm-hmm. He had the popularity, he had the publicity, but most of all, he had the money to make a reality his dreams and visions for his people. He had to go.
Wow. And speaking of hip-hop, I want to get your opinions about the African Bambaataa issue. One of the founding fathers of hip-hop accused of mm-hmm. molesting black boys when he was a younger man.
Right.
And the backlash from the, I guess, the hip-hop community. What's your take on the African Bambaataa thing?
Well, with the African Bambaataa situation, I think it's unfortunate. I would have to say that a man is innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. I have to say that. But if the allegations are in fact true, it's very sad that the origin of hip-hop culture is also part of the pedophilia conspiracy. I mean, we've derided the Roman Catholic Church for their role in it. We've talked mm-hmm. about the black church for their role in it. And now having such a major cultural institution such as hip-hop being embroiled in this type of pedophilia situation is very unfortunate. However, I would say, though, that whether he's guilty or not, that does not negatively reflect on the culture of hip-hop, because hip-hop is not about one person. Hip-hop is not about one person. Someone makes a mistake within a movement, the movement cannot be cast off of that person's mistake. Hip-hop is bigger than Africa Bambaataa, although he was one of the fathers of it. You know, it's sad. Being a psychologist, a school psychologist, I deal with pedophilia all the time. It's a regular occurrence in our community. I get emails, phone calls at least every month about pedophilia, mostly girls, but also boys. Mm-hmm. And we must keep in mind that most pedophilia victims are victimized by blood relatives. Mm-hmm. Now, in the African Bambaataa situation, if that is true, what's alleged that he committed, he was not a blood relative of these men, mm-hmm. which is somewhat out of the norm. Normally, children are molested by people they're related to. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's a very sad thing. It's something that the black community doesn't want to deal with at all, because most people don't want to have to choose between victims and perpetrators in their own family. So the family tends to cover this up. I mean, you look at black women, one out of every four black women will be molested in her life. In almost all of those cases, the perpetrator will never be brought to justice, even by the family itself, which means the girl or the boy now has to live a life seeing the person who took their innocence and having to act like it never happened. Imagine being at a family cookout and the uncle or aunt who molested you is there, sitting right next to you. And everyone there knows that they took advantage of you, and not even the family will bring them to justice. I think that's a very sad occurrence, very sad occurrence. But it's a big issue, and I think on the positive side, if there is one, the African Bambaataa situation has brought pedophilia to the surface in the black community as something that has to be dealt with.
I kind of compare it to, I mean, I know he's innocent to proven guilty. I compare it when I hear about African Bambaataa, how great he was as far as his contribution. I think also about James Bevel, Reverend James Bevel of the Civil Rights Movement.
What about him?
Like, he was accused of molesting his daughters, sleeping with his daughters. But he helped organize the March on Washington, even the Million Man March. He was one of Dr. King's most trusted advisors and lieutenants.
Yeah.
He was very charismatic.
Very familiar. But here's my thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
Was the accusation substantiated? And let me say why. One of the most powerful techniques you can use to disadvantage a revolutionary is to accuse him or her of sexual misconduct, especially with a child, which is why we got to be, even with the African Bambaataa situation, we got to be very careful of making sure the evidence is crystal clear, that the people bringing the charges are not in any way, shape, or form operating under the auspices of the FBI. It just has to be something that has to be something that's ruled out. Because if you accuse someone of child sexual misconduct, mm-hmm. the accusation alone is enough for them to be incriminated on their child abuse record, which means they can never be exposed to children ever. Just on the accusation, right. it's on your record. Mm-hmm. You see, and even if you're proven not to have been guilty, you have to go through a process to get that lifted off. So when it comes to child sexual crimes, we got to be very clear, because children are very impressionable. And one thing I did in college, working on my doctorate, I did a research paper on child custody cases, sexual abuse, and the impression of childhood imagination. And what the research shows, children will manufacture a story to please the adults yes. who are wanting them to say a certain thing. Let me give you an example. Okay. I'm interviewing a little girl, mm-hmm. and she knows I don't like her father. Mm-hmm. I ask questions about an alleged experience she had with her father, but I ask those questions in a way that is leading the answer. Did he touch you here? Mm-hmm. You never ask a child to, you don't lead with that question.
Right.
Did he touch, you don't, what happened to you? The questions have to be open-ended with no leading material as to what you want them to say. Which is why whenever a child is victimized sexually, I don't think no one should talk to that child. No one at all until you have a witness and a skilled interviewer. I don't even like the parents being the interviewers because they're going to lead. Mm-hmm. Did he put his hand here? Did he touch you here? Did he take you upstairs? All those questions are leading. You're providing the details. To properly interview a child who alleges to be a victim of child sex abuse, it must be open-ended. Did something happen to you? Can you tell me what happened? Okay. That's how you're supposed to interview a child. You don't give them details about what you think happened, because you begin to create an imagination, and you begin to create what we call in psychology a false memory. And a lot of black men and women are in jail, and I know this for a fact as someone who goes into the prisons, who are in jail for very long times, falsely accused of child sex offenses they did not commit on the implanted memories of children. We got to be very careful when we start talking about questioning kids about whether they were touched or not. The person doing the question cannot have an emotional stake in the outcome, or they will lead those questions.
Well, I ask you this as well, because I know you're in the land of the Kings, B.B. King, Elvis, mm-hmm. and Dr. King died here.
Yeah.
And on December 8th, 1999, it was proven in a court of law that the government, the U.S. government, was complicit in the assassination of Dr. King. And recently we lost somebody who was connected to that balcony assassination, Reverend Billy Samuel Billy Cowles.
Okay.
And he was under suspicion, I don't know, years ago. He kind of incriminated himself on national television, said mm-hmm. he got the way so to get a clear shot. What do you think about his legacy, or what do you think about people that, you know, like Ernest Withers, for example, who's from Memphis too, who was accused of being FBI informants or traitor to the cause? What do you think about those people and their relationship to our history or our narrative?
For me, the system that creates those types of personalities should be the focus of our investigation more than the people themselves. Because until you do something about the system that breeds the sellouts, who the sellouts are irrelevant, because it's the system that's producing them. There will be another Barack Obama. There's another one coming. There'll be another Colin Powell. There'll be another Reverend Cowles. There's going to be others who come in their veins. So it's not the person that matters. What are we going to do as a community about the system that allows our best minds to be taken and used against us? The reason black people have more sellouts per capita than any other people is because we're the most hopeless people. See, if I don't have faith in my people's ability to overcome oppression, I will join the oppressor. Black people, less than any other group of people, don't believe we can shake this off. Even when you talk to scholars, revolutionaries, I'm beginning to hear elders say we ain't never coming out of this. Mm-hmm. And I hate to hear that, because if a child hears an 80-year-old, imagine being 8 and you hear an 80-year-old who done lived his whole life said this ain't never ending. Mm-hmm. Why should he fight it? I might as well go on to the other side. Which brings me to another issue. I think within the revolutionary community, one of our biggest problems is a lot of revolutionaries, especially in my generation, the young brothers, they're not really in the struggle to change anything. They're in the struggle to make change. They're in the struggle to get paid. They're in the struggle to hustle. It's about self-aggrandizement. It's about the compensation of one's ego. I don't see the type of scholars we had with the Dr. Bens, the Dr. Clarks, the Francis Crest Wilson, the John G.M. Jackson, George James. I don't see them types anymore. Now, black scholarship is a hybrid type of scholarship with an intent to make money. Most of our scholars don't really have any institutions that they're building or even thinking about building. It's all about information dissemination. And that's very dangerous because information is not going to save black people. It is essential. It is critical. We need it, but it will transform nothing. It's not the knowing. It's the doing. But you need to know to do. But what happens when you know and you're not interested in doing? You get intellectual masturbation. And I think right now the black consciousness community is in a state of intellectual paralysis and intellectual masturbation, where all we want is the knowledge, but we don't want no part of the responsibility.
Dr. Umar Johnson, thank you so much. In the words of Great the Guilty, we love you madly. Keep thank on you. Producing and putting.
Intellectual masturbation. I remember when we used to say that. Armchair revolutionaries. And
right.
Intellectual masturbating on what they want to talk about and don't want to do anything. Just sitting up talking and having a dialogue around this and a dialogue around that, but they never, ever will take a step to actually, act or organize or help organize or anything like that. But we do have some people in our community that are doing some really, really, really great things. That was an interview by my good friend, Brother Ron Hurd, in Memphis, my hometown of Memphis. And that interview took place at the Slave Haven Museum. Let me give a shout out. Aja and I, Feather Light and I used to actually give tours there at the museum. And right. Oh my God, that was such an eye-opening experience.
It really was.
Going there. I mean, we started out just like volunteers, just coming there to like volunteer a couple of days. And my God, we stayed there, what, about 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, about 4 years.
Yeah, and met so many people from around the world. And I tell you, when we first started giving tours there, the most of the guests that came were like Asians or
Australians.
Yes, a lot of Australians, but no black people.
No black people.
If some black people came, they were from out of town.
Always.
Yeah.
But they would say, my brother told me to come here. I've been living here all my life. I never thought about coming here.
The
relatives from out of town would bring them.
Yeah, it was amazing how no black people knew about the Slave Haven Underground Museum. It was just amazing. It was, I mean, seriously, mostly Europeans that came there.
Yeah.
And so just being there giving the tours, I would learn so much from the people coming that would share information too. But over the years, more and more black people began to come and more schools.
Yeah.
So
word began to spread.
Word began to spread. I mean, it's a great place. If you're ever in Memphis, go right there on 2nd Street to the Slave Haven Underground Railroad Museum, and you'll be able to see where people were able to come in from the Mississippi River and go underground and come in through the tunnel, or just make their way there through the best way that they possibly could. What do you think about what he said about, in which we mentioned this just maybe about a week or so ago when Sarah was on the line, about Otis Redding and Sam Cooke, people that were trying to gain the rights to their music and also become involved in the civil rights movement, like Sam Cooke. Cooke said that he was going to fund the movement. Jimi Hendrix, you know, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Jimi Hendrix, I've always thought for years until I watched the documentary, did some research on Jimi Hendrix. I always thought that he just died of an overdose. Notice how they always try to tell us that our people died of an overdose. Now, they've been doing all this great work. I mean, just musical geniuses or whatever. Then all of a sudden, they're a dope head. Michael Jackson,
exactly.
Prince, Jimi Hendrix, Whitney Houston, okay? These people always seem to die of some drug overdose. It's either a drug overdose or a plane crash, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the common deaths.
Those are the common scenarios.
Right.
Yes, that they
so
put
when
out.
When you hear anything, Ronald Brown died in a plane crash, but then they said he had a bullet in the back of his head, okay? Secretary of State. I think he was Secretary of State, Ron Brown, during the Clinton administration. But so whenever you hear something about some high-profile person died of an overdose or a plane crash, telltale sign. Telltale sign is something behind that. Okay, or if they die in a bathtub, blah, blah, blah. All of that stuff, that's all set-up crap. That's set-up. But Otis Redding, Sam Cooke, Jimi Hendrix, all of these brothers were either trying to gain the rights to their music and or getting ready to fund the movement. Like Prince.
Exactly.
Same thing. Prince fought for his musical rights, was funding the movement. Jimi Hendrix was fighting for his music rights, was about to fund the Black Panthers.
Right.
Sam Cooke, fighting for his music rights, about to form the new civil rights movement. Whitney Houston, about to investigate what the hell was going on. And that's why I say her death and her daughter's death, please don't think that all of that was just something that just happened.
Mm-mm. No coincidence. No ironic. Oh, how ironic.
Mm-mm.
Poor girl. No.
Mm-mm.
Use your third eye.
Please. And get off the fluoride, and maybe you'll be able to see it.
Exactly.
Which is why they put the fluoride in the toothpaste.
Yes.
And the water.
Right.
So,
dumb you down.
So, to dumb us down.
Yes.
To dumb us down. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let me see if Delta's ready for her hot topics at the last minute.
Yes.
You ready, Delta?
Yes, I am. And I know I supposed to jump right into my hot topics, but I was listening at that piece what you was playing just now about, I can't say his name,
Umar?
Obama, say his name, I can't call the name. The guy
Umar?
That was, the one that was over molesting the kids, I can't call his name.
Oh, Afrika Bambaataa.
Afrika Bambaataa, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to that just now, and I was just really thinking, and I would, now this is my take on it, and I really would like to talk on this. This is my take.
Okay.
This is what's wrong with a lot of people. They don't want to come out because a lot of people don't believe. And do we? And then also, we do got some people make up lies. We really do. We do got some people that are make up lies on, especially like going through a divorce. We got some kids. The parents would take their kids and use against each other. But I must say, is everybody who heard about this story with him, it's no secret.
Yeah.
This is what they said. It was no secret. Everybody knew about it, but nobody would do nothing. They wouldn't do anything because the man was making money and it was hip-hop. That's why nobody didn't do anything. And a lot of us, think about it, we may not have been witness to child molesting or anything, but we have made a scene, stuff went on, and we know that we felt like it wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Think about what I'm saying.
Yeah, you
know. We didn't say anything. We may see somebody do somebody wrong on the job, and we know they did them wrong. We know they was out to get them, but we didn't open our mouth. Think about that. So these kids, when these kids come out, we got to be careful, because people in high places, they will use anybody to discredit these kids. And then, okay, why he jumps up and he goes and do an interview, Obama did, with nobody but Fox News.
Right.
He goes and do an interview with Fox News. Why you wouldn't come to your people and do an interview?
All over the black media.
Yeah, why you didn't come to your people? Because you know why? Because his peoples was going to drill him on it.
Yeah, they want to actually bring him to, like, a community council, like, to a community trial. And apparently he's trying to avoid that. So he went right on over to the Fox channel. Which the lady that interviewed him, they know each other. Afrika Bambaataa and that lady, apparently they're friends. And she's supposed to have, like, been in the community with them and all of this, and practiced martial arts with some of the other people there in the community. So she was a safe interviewer.
That was that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So that was just my take on that. You know, we got to be. I mean, and I agree with the man that was, you know, giving the interview and was talking about don't lead a child, and that's true. Don't lead a child. But we showing up got some people who knew this, and we got some people who know stuff goes on. And I must say this story again. I'm going to get on into my hot topic. My friend girl told me these words, and my friend girl have very large breasts, and she have always had them from a little girl. And she told me one of the preachers touched her breast. And the preacher was so forbidden, like so high. You know how we are in the community with preachers, black preachers. You know, we know because I'm one of them. But he touched her breast. She told her mother. Her mother thought that she cussed God and pulled God out of the sky and fed him and put hot tar on him. And she told me that her mother slapped her in the mouth.
Wow.
And this man touched her breast, the preacher. And she said from that day to this one, she never opened her mouth. And she said there would have been other preachers touched her breast because they were so large. And my friend was so distraught over that as a child. When she got grown and got a job, she got her breast reduced.
Oh, that was something that traumatized her.
And that's what I'm saying. We know a lot of this stuff go on, but we won't say anything. And we are afraid. So think about what I'm saying, people. I'm not saying some kids don't make up lies. Some children do, but sometimes you can really fan out a lie. But with this man, Afrika Bambaataa, whatever you call it.
Bambaataa.
Everybody knew this.
Yeah.
This is no secret. If you go and talk to all the people who worked around him, they said they knew it. It wasn't no secret.
Even his bodyguards have come out and have said that, yes, they knew somebody that was living with him. So now the question is, were the other people that knew, were they involved as well? And they are somewhat complicit in the whole crime because they knew what was going on. I mean, there's so many stories. If you just go on YouTube, I mean, God. I mean, so many people are talking about, what is it, Sinetta TV. They have all these different interviews right there in the community, not only with some of the people, the victims, but also there's some rattling going on. It's throwing me off my thoughts. But also, not just the victims. Okay, the rattling. Okay, so even the victims have come out and spoken. The bodyguards, people in the community. So I mean, honestly, I didn't want to believe it, but. This kind of like worse than the Bill Cosby. Well, it is worse than Bill Cosby because these are children, and so many people knew about this. I mean, 20, 30, 40 years have passed, and all of this has been going on, and finally, thankfully, these people have come to a point in their life where they feel like they need to speak out and say something about what happened to them. So.
And then I tell you another thing why people are speaking out, Black Rose. A lot of people are speaking out now because, see, years ago, and we all know this, years and years ago in the black community, it was a secret. You didn't say anything.
Yeah,
just like the man said, the
black community, it was going on, but nobody said anything. Now people are liberated. Now people are coming out and saying what happened to them. And can I give you another perfect example? This is a true story. Go back and look this up. Monique, remember, played that movie about Precious and won that Academy. Listen to this. Monique came out and said that her brother had been raping her from a little girl. Okay, her mother and them, when Monique went to her, when the mother and them found out about it, the mother and them, Monique, like, they disciplined the brother, but I guess Monique felt like they should have did more, called police. But what was Monique's mama response? Monique's mother, go and pull the interview up. Her mother did not deny it happened. This is her mother's exact words. She says it was family business. We felt like Monique shouldn't have brought it to the out to the opening. We felt like it should have been just kept among family and family deal with it. That's what Monique's mother said. That was her press release. That was Monique's mother. Well, Monique, in order for her to get released, that was her way of releasing herself.
And trying to heal.
So, trying to heal. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We, you know, so I mean, I agree with the man to a certain degree, and I disagree with him to another degree. But we do, I must say this, because I don't want to leave no false for nobody. We do have people use it as a weapon when they're going through a divorce and they want to get custody. We do have husbands and wives and different ones play one child against the other and use it as a weapon. But it shouldn't be. And that's something that should never be used lightly when you say child molesting. Just like the man said, it, you will be ruined. You will never be the same. Nobody will never look at you the same. So that's just something I had to say. Well, let me go to my hot topic. There was a young man in Prince William County. That's all it said. They said Prince William County. The young man
is
a...
Georgia
County? No, it said Prince William.
Prince William County. Okay.
It said Prince William. Okay, the young man, he is 15 years old. He's on free. Listen at me, audience. Hear me real good. The young man is on free lunches. He is on free lunches. The young man said when he went through the line, the student, the high school student, black boy, said when he went through the line, he didn't get his milk on his tray. The young man walked back to get his milk, and he got his milk and was taking it to go back and sit down. The principal nim says, one of the school police officers said the young man stole a 65-cent carton of milk. They called the police. The young man tried to explain to them and tell them, no, my milk was not on my tray. They took him and handcuffed him, took him to jail, put him out of school, trying to charge him with a felony, and trying to, just like you said, they're trying to charge him with a felony because they say he was resisting arrest, but the young man said he wasn't resisting arrest. He was trying to tell them he did not get his milk, and he did not want the police to handcuff him because he didn't do anything wrong. He was trying to tell them he didn't get his milk. So they trying to charge him with grand larceny for a 65-cent
carton of milk. The mother says they put him out of school for a 65-cent milk, and the mother said the milk's supposed to have been free because her son is on free lunches.
So how you know what?
Is this child in a white, all-white school, and he's black or something?
They didn't say Miss Hattie. All they got on the thing is they just said it was Prince like William, a little bit.
Prince William County is in Virginia.
Okay. Well.
So if it's Prince William County, it'd be interesting to know what school it was, because here again, as a public school administrator for many, many years, that's really asinine, because any person with common sense would just go and give a child 65 cents, even if they did steal the milk, if they wanted some milk and more milk.
Since you say the milk will do the body good, go ahead on that's give them the
crazy.
Milk.
That's crazy.
Right.
That's real crazy.
But it's a conspiracy out, and I believe it. The lady said they're trying to give her son a felony on his record. And she
I'm looking at a picture of the little boy. So, yeah, he's very Afrocentric. He has on this, like, Malcolm X shirt. He has some type of, like, natural hairstyle. Well,
Anybody... There really has been a move on people who really are into their blackness or Africanness for many years, 20 years, even as a public school administrator, because of the work that I was doing in the public schools in terms of supporting African American children and how I went about doing it, which was a very direct manner, and I was not afraid to advocate for black children, and people start throwing that stuff at you. It cuts across all professions and all children, from children all the way up to adults. And the man is right when he talks about when people figure that they can't provide any support for them being who they are, black people, then they join the oppressor. I believe that is such an accurate statement. Because I can remember what happened to me as a professional black woman in Minneapolis public schools right before I was pushed out. And they will even elicit children to help them to do that to you if you have, you know, an African mind. And you support African children and African ways in any kind of manner. So if this child was like that, that's basically why he was attacked in that manner.
Absolutely.
They want to keep you in your place, you black people who think you are okay with being black and not wanting to assimilate in a manner in which we would like you to assimilate.
Yeah. None of that.
You will not be you. We are not having it.
So that's quite unfortunate. I hate that for the young man and his family, and I sure hope that his mother has the support that she needs in order to fight that, because this, again, prison the pipeline, school prison pipeline.
Doesn't say what school it is.
I'm looking at the article, and it does not say the school. It just says...
They don't want to get a bad rap.
It's at Graham Park Middle School. I apologize. Here it is. Graham Park Middle School.
Oh, okay. Okay.
In Prince William County. So you can easily Google Graham Park Middle School. We should flood that school tomorrow, all this week, because they're going to investigate. So... Graham Park Middle School in Prince William County. Call the school tomorrow. There can be our activism if you want to act on this and support the parents. The mother's name is Shamise Turk. Shamise, S-H-A-M-I-S-E, Turk. And the boy's name is Ryan. And so they arrested him because they said they handcuffed him because he became disorderly, of course. I would become disorderly as well. And he used a cell phone. He was probably trying to call his mother.
Call his mama? You didn't know he was.
Of course. Yes. Yes. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So, Delta, what else you have to see?
Okay,
then
we have one right here.
Right
here in my part of town. Right here in Biloxi, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a little 7-year-old black girl. Went to a predominantly white school in Biloxi, Mississippi, and the young girl wore a shirt, and she wrote the shirt that she had wore to school. It had "Black Girls Rock."
Uh-huh.
They told the young girl that she could not. The teacher called her up and told her she could not wear that shirt, removed her shirt off of her. Listen now. The teacher removed the shirt off of her and gave her another shirt to put on. When the young girl came home, the mother saw that the child didn't have the shirt on that she wore. The mother asked the young girl what happened to her shirt. The young black girl tells her mother, 7 years old, that the teacher removed her shirt. Her mother didn't believe it because she was just so, you know, this day and time. The mother goes to the school. Sure enough, the teacher said she removed this shirt. The principal was going along with it until the media picked it up. When the media picked it up, it was a whole different story. The young girl's mother said she specifically, her young daughter wanted to wear the shirt. And the mother said that the daughter was proud of wearing that shirt. And she said, "What is wrong with saying black girls rock?" It was no offense about it. It was pride in it, the mother said, and which I would think so too. But what it is, the white race do not want little black girls to feel pride about themselves. But that mother went and took it to the media and got her a lawyer, and then they had to come out and apologize and say they were sorry and say it would never happen again. But as black people and black parents, we have to stand up and fight. If you don't stand up and fight, they will run all over you. Because this is the were we going through a radio break?
No, I was just giving you the hand claps because that's what the parents need to do, stand up and fight, like you said.
We got to stand up and fight. You have to stand up and fight. If this mother hadn't stood up and fight, the principal was going along with it until the mother brought it to the media and it got all over the radio. It was everywhere down here.
Mm.
And they got shamed out.
So now what's going to happen with the teacher?
They didn't discipline her or nothing. They didn't discipline her.
Well, that needs to be the next step. Now, what are you going to do about this teacher? What are you going to do about her? Does she need to go through some more training? I don't know what needs to happen, but something needs to happen with this teacher, because you forced my child out of her clothes, which I could even push that on to some sexual harassment. So, you know, something needs to be done with that teacher.
Yep.
She removed the shirt?
She removed the shirt. Then, listen, that she didn't deny she removed it.
I mean, she was upset about that shirt. And see, there's a whole Black Girls Rock show that comes on.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
There's an organization called
crazy.
Black Girls Rock. Yeah, I can't think of the young lady's name. I want to say her first name is Beverly. she started this whole Black Girls Rock movement.
Right.
It's national. So you can't just take start a White Girls Rock show. Y'all been having them all this time. I mean, it, you don't say White Girls Rock. I mean, it just happens. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, we're assaulted with it every day. So why can't we have
No, you say white girls says, have a wet T-shirt. That's what they want to have a wet T-shirt.
Yeah, yeah. You have your girls going wild. That's your White Girls Rock thing. So let us have our Black Girls Rock where we actually acknowledge the accomplishments of young Black women and older Black women. I've watched the Black Girl Rock show, and they're great. I don't even watch BET, but I watch those Black Girls Rock shows.
See, she doesn't
yeah, become
people like Regina King, the Diana young Ross lady
hosted it. Hosted it.
Well, you know, this is the thing about white teachers, and I don't know if this was a white or Black teacher, but whatever kind of
white teacher, Miss Hattie. I mean,
okay, well, let me say this: sometimes you'll get caught up in stuff, and Black teachers will do the same thing. But whoever they are, one of the things is that teachers have to be culturally competent. That woman probably don't even know about Black Girl Rocks. What it means, she probably thought the little girl went out and just made that T-shirt up about it. She don't even get it, that it's a whole theme and a whole movement around pushing the young African-American young ladies that with not cultural pride so much as just growing and making something good and great of yourself. She don't even get it. And if she knew it, she probably would not have done that. But she don't even understand what she's dealing with.
Right. Her name is Beverly Bond. Beverly Bond. In fact, it's Black Girls Rock Incorporated. Okay? Black
we all know what it is. We all know about Black Girls Rock. But this woman don't. And because she's from Virginia.
I think we're losing you, Mother Hattie. Her name is Beverly Bond, and
I know the whole thing about that girl. I know.
Mhm.
No, I was just saying because this woman is from Virginia, she don't probably understand it or know it, and that's why it's so important for people to have cultural competencies, and before they start jumping on stuff. You know, stand back a little bit, stand down, and know what you're dealing with before you jump out and attack children. Just like the little boy that was in the, you know, getting his milk. And then he became upset because you all aren't listening to me. And whoever the administrator was at that school, just like all these other situations with administrators when they let the police come in and start dealing with stuff, That is not even a police issue. A freaking milk.
Right. That's not even a police issue. I totally agree.
That's over the board. Off the charts. Anyway, I'll stop.
And the principal went along with it because they said the principal got upset with the young man. Y'all know when somebody accuse you of something, that's embarrassing. He's a teenager before his friends. And
exactly.
His friends are seeing them handcuff him over anybody knows.
Well, it's not even about all that. If he's a little Afrocentric type boy, that's what it's really all about.
I'd like to give some information about this school if anyone wants to follow up or speak out on this Graham Park Middle School.
Okay.
The principal's name is Gary, G-A-R-Y. J initial Anderson, A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N. The telephone number is 703-221-2118. That's 703-221-2118. This is Graham Park Middle School.
And give me that last four again.
Okay, let me start all over. 703-221-2118. The principal's name is Gary J. Anderson. Now, this school is located in the oldest continuously chartered town in Virginia. The town and school are situated on 60 acres of land at the head of harbor of Quantico Creek, which was owned by John Graham, who owned a plantation. And the plantation was called the Graham Plantation. It was once a plantation. We all know what plantations were for. Okay. This school also, and this is, would be a good way to attack it, it also has its own TV station. It's called G as in good, P as in Paul, N as in Nancy, N as in Nancy, the number 38. That's G, P as in Paul, N as in Nancy, the number 38. They have their own TV station. So we should really blow them up.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you shared that, because if you remember Feather in Memphis, I remember that little black girl, she was in the ballet class
right.
at a school there. And mm-hmm. I mean, that ballet instructor told that little girl that her hair was too nappy and this and that and all of that, and she needed to pull her hair back. And oh, she had it pulled back.
She had it pulled back
in braids. You know how the ballerinas have to wear the bun. So the little girl had her braids pulled back in a bun. And
I
told that little girl that she had to take those braids out, or else she could not perform. Now, I used to take ballet. I know how racist the ballet world is. I mean, extremely racist. I mean, they just, oh God, just torment you. And so,
what was our phone number again?
703-221-2118.
See, to me, these are the kind of things that, rather than talking about bathrooms and who can go in whose bathroom, this is the kind of stuff that President Obama should have been withholding funds for, so our children could go to school in peace.
And in peace. And let me just finish this little story about the little girl, and then Aja has something about the warning signs from the universe, and we'll close out. But what we did in Memphis is, I mean, it seemed like almost half of the city, mm-hmm. or at least half of the black people, we got together. I mean, we called and we did all kinds of things, and it got so big in the city.
We were furious.
Oh, we were furious. It got so big in the city that everybody wanted to go to that little girl's performance that they were having at Shelby State Community College at that time. Mm-hmm. And, honey, it was so many of us black folks trying to go in there and support that little girl. They told us we could not come in unless we were friends or family. We had to have like permission or a ticket or some crazy mess, because it just blew up like that, because the whole community got behind this one little girl. We told them, you're going to let this little girl perform with our braids. You're going to do that. Or if we're going to tear this joint up, believe that. And they let that little girl perform.
That's so, your
Delta, we're going to have to cut the hot topic short right quick, because we want to finish up with this warning signs right before we
go ahead.
But I love those hot topics, Delta. That was very good. Thank you.
They were
so
very
much.
Good.
Thank you so much, because we have an action. We have an action tomorrow, and the action is to call Graham Park School, speak with Gary J. Anderson, or leave a message with his assistant principal. Flood the lines. I'm good with that.
And we need to put this on our Facebook page, y'all. Put it on the Facebook page, and let's tell the people.
Exactly, exactly. 703-221-2118, Graham Park Middle School. The little boy has been arrested, was handcuffed. He was accused of stealing a 65-pound carton of milk. Some nasty milk. Something that you shouldn't even be drinking in the first place.
In the first place.
Cow's milk.
Accused of grand larceny. Yeah,
exactly.
We're not calves.
So what's our message? What is our message? What is our request when we call?
Our request is to, I would say, and if you ladies have something else to add or change, I would say that no charges be brought against this little boy, and he needs an apology.
Yes.
And what else do we want?
Oh, I can go on because I could say.
Okay, so we got to keep it simple, ladies. So basically, our message is clear his record and give him an apology. And what else?
And you should have bought him some milk.
And to stop the harassment, period. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah. I was just warning signs from the universe. So far, we have moved the plan.
That's okay.
So we'll
that's okay.
But thank you so much, Delta. Thank you, Icy Hot. Thank you, Feather Life. Thank you, King B. Thank you, Scotty. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And we will be back later this week on Wednesday. Peace and good night. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste.